Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
House Speaker Jose Oliva pushes his health care agenda.
It is not right that the same drug costs more in the United States than it does in Canada. It is not right.
Governor Ron DeSantis wants to bring down the cost of prescription drugs as reports show Americans pay triple what other countries do for the same medications.
Of the healthcare industrial complex, a terribly dysfunctional healthcare system that is bankrupting the state and many of the individuals living in this state.
And we'll be talking with North Florida farmers looking for a hand in recovering from Hurricane Michael and get the latest on efforts to do one of the biggest highway expansions in the state in decades. I'm Lynn Hatter, and it's the start of the third week of the 60-day Florida lawmaking session. You're listening to Capitol Report. Stories of high-priced prescription drugs and mothers having to choose whether to buy medication or food are staples of the prescription drug price debate. Governor Ron DeSantis is responding to those issues by proposing the state import medications from other countries. But as Blaise Ganey reports, others aren't on the same page.
I want Floridians to be able to purchase prescription drugs from Canada at lower prices. There is an avenue under existing federal law to accomplish this. The president and I have had discussions. He is supportive of this effort and has asked me to plow ahead, which will require navigating an institutionally hostile bureaucracy, as we all know. But I think it's worth the effort because this could save money for individuals, could reduce costs for our businesses, and it can relieve pressure on our state budget.
That's Governor Ron DeSantis addressing the high prescription cost in Florida. According to a state analysis, Americans spend $47 billion on prescription drugs a year.
The simple fact is that American citizens pay two and even three times higher prices for the exact same medications than the citizens of Canada.
Bill Herbscher owns the Canadian Med Store, a company whose goal is solely to help citizens order medication from Canada and other countries.
The one thing all of these people have in common is that they struggle every day to afford their life-saving medication. And they've discovered that they can buy the exact same medication at half the price from a licensed Canadian pharmacy.
To reduce those costs, lawmakers have been doing just what DeSantis requested in trying to create a program that allows for the importation of FDA-approved prescription drugs from other countries, with Canada at the forefront. Daytona Beach Republican House member Tom Leake is sponsoring the bill to create the International Drug Importation Program and the Canadian Drug Importation Program.
The Canadian Prescription Drug Importation Program allows state-funded entities to import safe and effective prescription drugs from Canada. It significantly lowers costs, and it requires federal approval.
No state has received federal approval to do so since 2003, when the federal government authorized wholesalers to import only if approved first. But Leake says he wants to try.
I think in this instance, we've got to try. What we know is that the system we have, it doesn't work for many people. And this is an opportunity for us to provide a good alternative avenue for lower cost to benefit consumers.
John Clark, chief security officer of Pfizer, one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, argues that drugs coming from the outside of the country may be counterfeits and could be deadly to Floridians.
Online pharmacies are the Achilles heel of the U.S. system. Our closed supply chain is very, very secure in the United States. But U.S. citizens are ordering online and getting tons of counterfeits. And I would say tens of thousands of U.S. citizens are dying every day because of counterfeits. We just don't know about it because they're dying of diseases that people suspect is natural when they're taking counterfeit medicines, not treating their diseases.
But Palm Bay Republican House Member Randy Fine says most drugs aren't currently manufactured in America.
Well, it turns out the drug, while sold in America from an American distributor, the drug's made in Canada. In China. So the notion that if we have this sort of secure and protected and impenetrable system, and if we allow the rest of the world to get involved, and if we import their drugs, people are going to die. The system that we have right now is not entirely safe. And that's been very instructive to me in thinking about that. Apparently, about one in every 10 drugs that we take today is made in China.
The proposal is making its way through the House, but after multiple amendments were voted down that would add more testing and safety measures, Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith says changes must be made before he is in full support.
We have to address these issues. We cannot just put a blindfold over our eyes and just vote down all these amendments and vote yes in the underlying bill without some assurances that these issues are going to be addressed.
But Republicans are in the majority and may not need Democrat support. What the House does need is the Senate approval, and a similar bill in that chamber has not been scheduled for a committee hearing. I'm Blaze Ganey.
The Florida House is tackling health care reform, and leading the way is House Speaker Jose Oliva. He describes the current state of health care delivery as,
I'm speaking, of course, of the healthcare industrial complex, a terribly dysfunctional healthcare system that is bankrupting the state and many of the individuals living in this state.
Oliva put healthcare reform at the top of his priority list at the start of the legislative session, and leading the way to change is a repeal of Certificate of Need. That's the system that determines where hospitals, nursing homes, and other facilities can be built. The process is long and can rack up thousands of dollars in legal bills. Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen is carrying the House's Certificate of Need repeal bill.
Competition in most areas is good as long as we can make sure that the public is safe. CON should go the way of the dinosaur.
But supporters say getting rid of it could exacerbate an already existing shortage of doctors and nurses. Tearing down regulatory walls is not the only thing House leaders have set their sights on. The state is also making headway in getting more and different types of facilities up and running. Recovery care centers are aimed at cutting expensive hospital stays. Meanwhile, more doctors could soon be able to treat and advise patients remotely. Jacksonville Republican Representative Clay Yarborough says his proposal does a few things.
It facilitates and encourages the use of telehealth by authorizing all types of licensed healthcare practitioners to use telehealth to deliver healthcare services. It allows healthcare practitioners licensed in other states to deliver healthcare services to Floridians through telehealth if they register with the Department of Health.
Yarborough's bill would allow telehealth services to be offered statewide. Florida has slowly been ramping up those services during the past few years. Advanced registered nurse practitioners could be getting more leeway in practicing independently of physicians. That's courtesy of a physician. Republican Representative Carrie Pigman is an emergency room medicine doctor. He's been bringing the bill to the legislature since 2014. And his idea has historically been opposed by other doctors, like Corey Howard, the president of the Florida Medical Association. Howard argues advanced nurses don't have as much training as doctors.
It's the ability to actually know how to take care of not just what's common and what appears to be common, but what comes up that's not common, that presents uncommonly, the difficult patient that goes to the the nurse practitioner with a runny nose, and they wind up having a brain tumor.
Don't we do these turf issues every year? Wasn't the world going to end when the optometrists were granted the ability to prescribe certain oral medications? I don't remember the world ending when we did that. But by golly, it was years and years to get them to that point.
That's Pigman responding to the idea that advanced registered nurse practitioners should not be independent. Meanwhile, Governor Ron DeSantis has his own proposals. He wants to save the state money and cut the price of prescription meds by buying them from other countries where they're cheaper. But there are questions about whether the state can get federal permission to do that. Most of the House's health care proposals have Senate companion bills. However, few have been scheduled for hearings yet, and one, Certificate of Need repeal, is being postponed after nearly failing a Senate committee vote. still to come on Capitol Report, North Florida farmers come to the Capitol seeking hurricane relief.
If this bill does not pass and become law, there's a very good, I would venture to say, probably 40% of the panhandle won't be able to plant a crop.
And a college admission scandal in California reverberates around the country.
I'm never surprised that people will do things to get into tough universities.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Lynn Hatter. A bill to provide no-interest loans to farmers whose crops are impacted by natural disasters has cleared its first Senate committee. Backed by Republican Senator Ben Albritton, the measure is intended to help farmers whose livelihoods have been threatened by Hurricane Michael. Ahead of its first stop, Brian Daly spoke with the Florida Farm Bureau's head of legislative affairs, Adam Bassford, and a Holmes County farmer whose crop was decimated by the storm.
I am here with Adam Bassford, head of legislative affairs for the Florida Farm Bureau. You know, I wanted to first open it up so we can talk about SB 1804. And, you know, I understand you've been tracking it from its beginning and, you know, there's been an amendment filed. But I wanted to talk about, you know, the genesis behind the idea for introducing this bill and what it's meant to do.
Thanks. Well, obviously, Hurricane Michael just devastated parts of the Florida Panhandle. That's a very rural area, a lot of agriculture. Agriculture is the number one industry there in that part of the state. And trying to find ways to support these farmers that lost a lot. The cotton crop this year was going to be one of the best for a long, long time. The peanuts were about halfway harvested. Tons of forestry was damaged. Just all across the board, agriculture was devastated through Hurricane Michael. So we're trying to find ways that the Florida legislature and the state can help farmers stretch dollars and put the pieces back together to get back on their feet for the coming years. One way specifically that this bill is working on is a loan program to help farmers, specifically row crop farmers, primarily row crop farmers, to help get their financing back in order because they lost so much last year. More than $250 an acre, we're estimating, for most of the cotton growers and about that for peanut growers as well. And so trying to make it to where they can restructure their debt from last year so that they can move forward in planting a crop for 2019 and get this tragedy behind them.
For people that have been following this or who, you know, saw it get filed, I think it was a day before session started. Now there's an amendment that changes it in a pretty significant way.
Right. The original bill basically took what was an established program that was written in about 2000, a program that had never been funded, it was in the Department of Agriculture. And now this is basically a way to try to modernize that, refresh it, and make it work specifically for Hurricane Michael. Try to put some parameters around what was lost per acre, how to make sure to get those loan funds distributed to where they need to be.
So from the original filed bill to now this amendment, which kind of takes out the grants portion of it and makes it a strictly loan-based thing, and I believe it's interest-free loans over 10 years. What's different from the way it looked at in its beginning to where how it's being refined or boiled down to its finished product?
Honestly, it's basically starting over. I mean, this was a latent program that was just sitting there that had never been funded. It did have a provision for the possibility of grants, and really that was never our goal in this this effort to try to get this loan program moving. We weren't trying to get grants. And so that's why you see that stricken from the language, because we're really focused on trying to get these loan funds out. And so it's taking that the primary form, taking that old statute and refining it to where it's something more modernized and something that actually fits specifically Hurricane Michael. But also, I mean, we live in Florida. I mean, we think hurricanes and natural disasters are going to be fairly common. So trying to see, is this something that can move forward and be a useful program and be funded greater? But our focus right now is just dealing with Michael.
for the people who have, you know, this is their first time hearing about this bill, I mean, what would you want them to know about it?
Basically, it's a way to help farmers plant next year's crop. They lost a ton last year. And, you know, farming is a risky business. We have crop insurance. It didn't cover nearly anywhere near the production costs. We need farmers in this country. And having a way to help them stay in business and stretch that debt that they incurred last year over 10 years is a great way to make sure that they can continue to do the things that they have to do to feed and clothe and house this country. That's what farmers do. And we need to make sure, especially in that area where farming is so prevalent, where that is the biggest economic driver in the area, we need to make sure that those farmers are going to be able to continue to put their crops in the ground each year.
My name's Jeremy Rowling. I'm a farmer in Holmes County in the Panhandle, peanuts and cotton mostly, a little corn.
To start with, could you just tell me, what did Hurricane Michael do to your land, to your crops, and you know, that'll help us get to why you're here today?
Okay. Hurricane Michael was a storm like I've never seen in my lifetime. I didn't have the structural damage that Jackson County had, but crop damage. I was picking 1,200-pound cotton prior to the storm. After the storm, my yield went to less than 200 pounds. I mean, it was a complete loss.
When you first heard, I don't know how you first became aware of something like this being filed. Is it something where you were looking for something to help supplement those losses and you found this? Or how did you come to know about this bill?
I'm involved in the County Farm Bureau, and some friends of mine were involved in the process and kind of got involved early on because crop insurance, you don't realize, you know, if you file a claim, your coverage drops by 10%. Well, last year during Irma, you know, we had losses. This year, Michael came in, was catastrophic loss. Most of us only buy about 65% coverage because of the cost per acre of cotton. Because, you know, you very seldom have a total loss in cotton. So, you know, we only had about 65% coverage, and plus our yield was off 10% because of Irma last year.
Could you give me your thoughts on this bill, if you can, and what it would mean for Northwest Florida farmers to see it go through?
It would be a big shot in the arm. The majority of us at farm, you know, we're extended. Everybody is. So your credit line's extended. We had limited coverage on insurance. So this would be a shot in the arm to bridge the gap until we get our conventional financing to try to get back on our feet. I am in support, and I think it would be a great asset to the Northwest Florida.
You said you're part of the County Bureau. Any discussion with some other people who farm either, you know, cotton or other crops? Have you gotten a sense of their support or otherwise for it?
I believe everybody I've talked to has been supportive of it. If this bill does not pass and become law, there's a very good, I would venture to say probably 40% of the Panhandle won't be able to plant a crop.
And I don't want to make you speak for others, but just what's the kind of buzz up there as everyone sort of collectively recovers?
It's kind of a despair right now. I mean, everybody's kind of, there's no federal disaster package in place yet. This would be our only help to try to bridge the gap.
So it's not as if there are like all these options where aid might be coming in. You kind of got a one of one situation?
As of right now, yes.
That was WFSU Public Media's Ryan Daly. Florida Senate President Bill Galvano is the driving force behind a new transportation plan that's coming up for another committee discussion in the Senate tomorrow. But as Regan McCarthy reports, the measure could face a bumpy road in the House.
Senate President Bill Galvano says Florida's population has grown and its infrastructure needs to keep pace.
You know, if we're talking about 850 people a day, and that's a city a little larger than the size of Orlando every year coming on. And that's why, I feel like infrastructure, and when I talk about infrastructure, I'm not just talking about roadways. I multi-purpose, because you have to have the water availability, sewer, all of these issues. And we are challenged by our own success.
Galvano wants to extend the Suncoast Parkway from the Tampa Bay area to the Georgia border and extend the Florida Turnpike west to connect with the Suncoast Parkway. He also wants to build a roadway called the Heartland Parkway. The plan is to make the most of the construction by co-locating water, sewer, and internet services, as well as bike lanes and footpaths. Galvano says that paves the way for some of the state's more rural communities to grow. But that's a concern for Sierra Club lobbyist David Cullen.
We're concerned about the opportunity costs of fragmenting the landscape, habitat, watershed features, and the tremendous potential for sprawl. The interchanges and the intermingling of the roads with providing from the get-go apparently water and sewer. And that is a recipe for sprawl.
And Cullen isn't the only one with concerns. Governor Ron DeSantis has said he's very sensitive to the idea of signing onto projects that could result in Floridians paying more tolls. Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee is ushering Galvano's plan through the Senate committee process. He says the bill provides a funding stream for the proposed projects, which includes using money from the state's Transportation Trust Fund, some of which has previously been directed to general revenue. But Lee admits the project does expand toll roads. He says he wishes there was another option.
But until someone with the courage and the vision to fix the delta that's being created by the demands on our state infrastructure and the per capita deterioration of the gas tax due to fuel efficiency, electric vehicles, and what have you, we're not going to have any options in Florida. We're basically going to have these kinds of limited access facilities are going to have to be funded through mechanisms like this, or we're not going to be able to build them.
Lee says he expects to see the bill change as more stakeholders weigh in and the measure moves through the process.
We've tried to think through this. There's probably a lot more to do, and there's probably a lot more the House will have in store for us as well.
But so far, there's no House companion for the bill. President Galvano told a group of reporters he believes House Speaker Jose Oliva supports a plan for infrastructure expansion, and Galvano expects to see that issue work out as both chambers work through their budget proposals.
This is mainly in the beginning stages a function of budget, and so we'll see whether they are in fact moving the funds into the trust fund, and if not, then it will become something we're going to have to negotiate through session.
Galvano says there's plenty of time left in the legislative session for his idea to move forward. The final day of the regular session is May 3rd. I'm Regan McCarthy.
And here's Gina Jordan with a look at what's going on tomorrow at the Capitol.
Here's a look at what's happening Tuesday at the Florida Capitol. In the House, a committee will discuss how to enact a constitutional amendment that requires automatic restoration of voting rights for most felons who fulfilled their sentences. Voters approved the amendment in November, and many elections offices have already started carrying it out without legislative intervention. Parental consent may soon be required for minors seeking an abortion. The proposal is stronger than the current requirement that parents simply be notified before the abortion. The school choice program, known as Schools of Hope, may go through changes. The program is designed to send charter schools more students from low-performing traditional public schools. Lawmakers seem ready to overhaul the insurance practice known as assignment of benefits. Insurers contend the practice has become riddled with fraud and litigation, while plaintiffs' attorneys and other groups say it helps make sure claims are properly paid. And in a bid to address prison staffing shortages, the minimum age for correctional officers may be lowered by 1 year to 18. In the Senate, more people charged with crimes may be eligible to be sentenced as youthful offenders. A bill would allow more lenient sentencing involving felonies committed before age 21. Three major toll road projects are being considered, including an extension of the Florida Turnpike. The legislation is a priority of Senate President Bill Galvano. Confirmation hearings will be held for Secretary of State Laura Lee and Department of Management Services Secretary Jonathan Satter. And a lot of agency budgets are on the table. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
And finally tonight, 50 people have been indicted following a college admissions scandal involving universities across the country. As WGCU's Rachel Iacovone reports, in Southwest Florida, professionals from both sides of the admissions process are speaking out.
I'm never surprised that people will do things to get into tough universities. I was a little surprised at the scope of this and the avenue of using faking athletic students. I was surprised at that, but not that something like this was going on.
That's Mark LaViolette.
He's the admissions director at Florida Gulf Coast University. The school had no involvement in the high-profile scam, but even at the less-known university, LaViolette recalls a time someone tried.
I've been here 15 years, and I can recall only one instance where somebody in my office offered some money to get their student admit. I think I'd already denied the student one time in 15 years.
LaViolette says the side door created by manipulating athletic records isn't wide open at FGCU, as it may be at a private institution. Florida's public university system looks at prospective student athletes as it does any prospective student. So being good at a sport doesn't get you a pass when it comes to test scores and GPA requirements. Still, admissions consultants can be used for state schools.
A lot of retired or ex-admissions professionals will go into the consulting business. So families will pay them to help them navigate the admissions process, because in some cases it can be a little complicated.
Ashley McNaughton is one such admissions consultant based out of Estero. She got her start teaching English in Europe, where she realized through helping her students through the admissions process that she kind of had a knack for it. So she went to school and received her counselor certification at UCLA. Now her mornings begin with a quick scan of her emails.
And then I get in touch with my students to follow up on how their test prep's going, how their essays are going, if they've done any campus visits, what's going on, where they are in the process.
Right now, McNaughton has 10 students she's working with. She likes to keep it under 20 so she can give each student as much time with her as they need. Typically, parents reach out at the SAT age, around 16 or so, and McNaughton works with them up to their high school graduation. When her students get into their top picks, it feels, McNaughton says,
amazing. I mean, most of my kids, I work with them for 2 years, so it's a long process, and I really get to see them grow, kind of take ownership of their process, and then to see them get in after all their hard work is great.
For a typical two-year consulting job, McNaughton's prices range from $1,500 to $5,000, depending on what services parents and students are looking for. But, she says, those services never include reaching out to university admissions departments on behalf of a student, or worse, as was seen in the recent college cheating scandal.
I and all of my colleagues that I know of, we work really hard to maintain an ethical, honest process with our students and teach them to own their process. So to hear that somebody, you know, kind of did completely the opposite and kind of broke the system is really disappointing.
I'm Rachel Iacovone.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back tomorrow. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council. Advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education. Online at myuff.org.